Hey folks, this is Bill Bubba Bussey from the Rick and Bubba Show, and I just love Weather Brains. Those guys are twisted.
This time on Weather Brains, an amazing severe weather event in Alabama.
I don't recall such a barrage of large hail over a 3 or 4 day period.
How and where do we rebuild after Hurricane Katrina?
We can learn from a disaster, and we have that option here so that we don't have a repeat.
Suggestions from a damage researcher who spent 5 months on the Gulf Coast looking at the destruction Katrina caused. Plus, we'll talk about using the terms showers versus rain.
To me, there's a huge difference in the terms. You can't use them to describe the same kind of weather.
Brian Peters goes to the dictionary to look up the word geek.
A person regarded as foolish, inept, or clumsy.
And a personal revelation from J.B. Elliott.
I've always known I was a geek.
That's all coming up. Welcome to Weather Brains, the podcast that's all about weather, produced by the Weather Geeks with the Weather Company from Birmingham, Alabama. I'm David Black, and with us for this podcast is James Spann, Chief Meteorologist of ABC 3340 in Birmingham. Hello, Mr. Spann.
Hey, David, how are you?
I'm doing superbly, and I have to thank you. I guess maybe you are responsible for the absolutely gorgeous weather Alabama and the Southeast have been enjoying the past few days. Do you guys have some special machine with which you make that happen?
I wish, but I think we deserve that. You know, we had 4 consecutive severe weather days here last week, so we deserved a good weekend. It was nice.
And we sure had a hail of a situation the past few days, too. I've never seen hail to the extent that we had in Alabama.
I want to hear JB talk about that. He's been around here a long time. I've been doing this since 1978. I don't recall such a barrage of large hail over a 3 or 4 day period.
Speaking of Mr. Elliott, hello to JB and also to Brian Peters with us. JB, what's your hail experience?
My worst hail experience was in the mid-1960s when a big thunderstorm, well, really a small shower, developed southwest of Birmingham Airport. And we were watching it on the old WSR-3 radar, which was an antique by today's standard. And all of a sudden, it blossomed into a big thunderstorm and dumped a lot of hail in Eastlake, ruined my roof, and went on to the northeast as far as Marshall County and left a path of hail that completely covered the ground in places. But even so, that does not compare with what we had last week, I don't believe.
That was incredible. Brian, in your years at the National Weather Service, did you see hail the way we had it the past week in Alabama?
Not as consecutive days and so consistently large as we had on, I believe it was the Wednesday evening, with, you know, a lot of baseball-size hail getting reported and golf ball plus up and so many pictures coming in. It was amazing. And I have to say, almost 40 years in the weather business, I have yet to see personally live hail that large. Seen lots of pictures, but never witnessed it personally.
You know, David, we had 500 viewers send in photographs, which is just amazing. It's you know, here we are in the digital era. We get these digital photographs and movies, and one of the photographs is just amazing. One person up in Blount County, which is northeast of Birmingham, had hail drifts to over 2 feet in their front door, and they had to shovel the stuff out of there. Can you imagine a 2-foot hail drift, and the hailstones were anywhere from quarter size to golf ball size?
I saw scenes in some of the pictures folks sent to you guys that looked like winter storm situations. Looked like snowfall.
Yeah, you know, you add the fog that develops, and you'd think you're right there in the middle of January. A high school baseball field was covered in hail. Looked like it had been snowing out there. Looked like the blizzard of 93 or something.
Well, it was tremendous, and I just hope that nobody got any real severe damage out of it. You know, as we're recording this podcast, we have lovely weather to enjoy in Alabama, but some of us have been watching on the internet some of the severe weather coverage out of the Plains states, and they have been getting a pounding with tornadoes in Oklahoma and elsewhere.
I'm afraid that a lot of people are going to discover roof damage the next time it rains here in Alabama.
And when is it going to rain here in Alabama again, guys?
Tomorrow afternoon, tomorrow night, especially tomorrow night.
Hoping it's not going to be a severe weather problem. I'm kind of, that 4 day stretch will take it out of you, you know? Yeah. But we've got a slight risk. We'll see. Might be an active evening. But the wind fields look a little weak. You look at the winds at 850, 5,000 feet off the ground. The models are only showing 25 knots, so hopefully it won't be too bad.
But they can flip-flop and cause you problems in forecasting too, right?
Oh, yeah. You know, when it comes to thunderstorms, expect the unexpected. So we'll be ready for whatever happens tomorrow night.
Hour by hour surprises.
As we discussed last week, you know, it's some of those small-scale features. So even though things look okay for tomorrow, and, you know, I said this on the noon broadcast today that looked like hail and damaging wind, but who knows?
Speaking of events going on, what have you to report for us this time?
Well, I wanted to revisit something that you always start our Weather Brains podcast with, and that's the word geek.
Uh-oh. I knew this was going to happen.
Oh, boy.
yes, you better all say that. JB is the one who prompted me to get in here, and I've looked it up in two different locations, and here is what I found. And this is the Merriam-Webster Online Dictionary. The first definition, a carnival performer often billed as a wild man whose act usually includes biting the head off a live chicken or snake. Number two, a person often of an intellectual bent who is disapproved of.
we go along with that.
I fit in that category.
And then in the, I think this is dictionary.com, they had exactly the same carnival performer, but they had that as the second definition, and they defined a geek as slang, by the way, a person regarded as foolish, inept, or clumsy, or a person who is single-minded or accomplished in scientific or technical pursuits, but is felt to be socially inept.
I plead guilty.
Well, I think from all those definitions, it probably fits. You know, James has often planned that if his ratings slid, he was going to bite the head off a live chicken. And then, you know, we are inept and clumsy, or I am.
I guess next week we'll have Brian look up the word doofus and see what that comes up with.
I'm not even going to go there.
Okay.
It is interesting, though, that they do say geeky means chiefly associated with student and computer slang. One probably thinks first of a computer geek. So, and you know, I don't know of too many weather people, meteorologists, who are not computer geeks along with being weather enthusiasts. So,
okay.
Anyway, I wanted to revisit that, you know, while it was fresh in my mind.
So, you learn a lot on this podcast here.
Really?
You get all kind of vocabulary skills and weather knowledge and everything else.
So, do we qualify as weather geeks?
Well, under the usage of the word geek, it says James Spann.
There you go.
You weren't looking for a raise anytime soon there, were you, Mr. Peters?
No, I'm sure that's not going to happen.
Very well.
So anyway, that should put JB's mind at rest. Now we all know what a geek stands for.
Do you feel
I can sleep well tonight since
you,
I know.
You feel like a geek, JB?
I've always known I was a geek.
Now, JB went to his where he grew up down in rural West Alabama. Did anybody call you a geek down there, JB?
They didn't. That word is not in the Havana Junction Dictionary.
Okay, I understand.
It's spelled F-O-O-L down there.
Okay, we've set the precedent now, guys. Well, we'll stick with Weather Geek then in the introduction to Weather Brains, since it, from what I can tell from these definitions, Brian's run across it, they seem to fit more or less anyway. We have a special interesting subject to cover in this podcast this time, and it goes back to Hurricane Katrina. Of course, there's been a tremendous amount of news coverage about Katrina and its aftermath, but this is an interesting twist on what has happened since then, and it gets into the subject of building back, which of course is where everybody's got an opinion and got a question or two. Where do you start rebuilding when you've got total devastation after something like Katrina? Do you rebuild the same way? Do you rebuild in the same place? Well, if we're smart, we might find answers in some of the extensive research into the damage Katrina caused. One of the people doing that research is a man named Tim Marshall. He works for Hague Engineering. That's a structural failure and damage consulting company in Dallas. Tim spent nearly 5 months surveying Katrina's damage all along the Gulf Coast. He says it wasn't Katrina's winds that impressed him as much as something else.
What I deal with is disasters. And, of course, business has been good the past couple of years. Our company actually assesses damage after natural disasters.
What were you looking for specifically?
There's a couple of things that we do. First of all, we do an overall general survey, aerial and ground surveys, to get an idea of the extent of damage. How bad is the wind damage? How bad is the storm surge damage? And we map that on out and provide a storm surge map and a wind map along with a damage survey report.
What did you learn out of Katrina?
Well, what I learned out of Katrina was this is actually a record storm surge. I've never seen anything quite like it myself as far as the height of the surge. And in recorded history, when you compare this to Camille, we had a storm surge that was broader and higher than Hurricane Camille.
What did that mean for structural integrity in various buildings and homes along the Gulf Coast?
If you live by the coast and you were under, say, 25 feet in elevation, you got some water. And those people who are like 15 feet or lower literally got their houses swept away. So it was really an eye-opening experience because some of these houses have withstood prior hurricanes, and now they're gone.
Was it really more the storm surge than the winds that caused the most damage, in certain areas anyway?
Sure. There's definitely wind damage, of course. Storm surge, though, is unprecedented, and moving water packs a whole lot more force than moving air. And just to give you some idea, just a wave coming in packs as much force as, say, a 200 or 250 mile an hour wind. If it's just a foot or two high and it's coming into a building, and buildings cannot really withstand that. And so we've seen a lot of houses that were literally undermined or gutted or literally just moved inland.
Were there any surprises, in your opinion? Surprises meaning you might have expected a certain extent of damage, and yet it was different from what you wound up seeing?
I wasn't really surprised at what happens to a specific building. What really surprises me is the overall extent of the damage. I mean, we're talking about areas from eastern Louisiana all the way through Mississippi and even parts of Alabama that were hard hit by a single hurricane. And that was really an eye-opening experience to me because I've never seen anything so broad as far as the hurricane goes. I mean, Camille was like a half or a third the size of Katrina. Katrina was just a huge storm.
From a construction perspective, were there any lessons to be learned about how we build structures along the Gulf Coast because of Katrina?
I think we have to take a look at where we build buildings. I mean, if we're building them down and they're only 10 or 15 feet above the water, we've got to elevate those things. You got to get them above the water. I mean, you can design to resist wind, but you cannot really design to resist this storm surge. So you got to get your buildings elevated, and all these buildings that are along the coast have got to be raised.
What, in your opinion, needs to be done for homes in, say, the New Orleans area to better protect them?
Well, of course, we have the levee system there, and we really have to take a look at how much of the city should have protection, and also if there should be any intermediate levees built, so that in case one part of the levee fails, the whole city doesn't flood. You've got some sort of redundant barrier there to help so that the city doesn't entirely flood.
What about for the Mississippi Gulf Coast?
Well, for the Mississippi Gulf Coast, I think planners have got to go back and say, hey, there's parts of Waveland and Pass Christian and Long Beach that really maybe we shouldn't build buildings. They're too low. And there's parts, of course, that are high enough that they can build back and elevate the building.
So what I'm hearing from you is that you believe there are some areas where folks should not rebuild.
That is correct.
What at this point do you do with this information in your business?
Well, in our business, what we're trying to do initially is determine the extent of damage so that the people can have a chance of rebuilding. And of course, because there's different kinds of insurance, you have a wind insurance and you have a water insurance, a lot of times we have to get involved with parsing that out. How much wind damage was there? How much water damage was there? So that the respective insurance can pay so much.
You have some memories, I suspect, burned into your mind from what you saw. Maybe it was storm surge related over wind damage. Tell me about some of those.
Well, of course, I wrote out Hurricane Katrina in Slidell, and it was absolutely an awesome experience to see the wind in the water. And it's really, you know, this is like my 15th hurricane, and you just never get used to the power of Mother Nature. It's really an awesome thing.
This was your 15th hurricane? Was it the most notable?
Yes, it's the most historic by far. It wasn't the most intense wind-wise, but it certainly was scary from the standpoint that the area that I was in actually flooded, and I was trapped for about 4 hours before the water went back down and I could get out of there, and that was scary to me.
What are your concerns as New Orleans is rebuilt, for example?
Well, I am concerned about parts of New Orleans that are so below sea level that maybe they should not think about building those areas back. In particular, the lower Ninth Ward is very low, and, you know, really, should we put people in harm's way again? Because, you know, it's not a question of if New Orleans is going to flood again, but when. I mean, it's going to happen again, so that we don't have a repeat.
You've been doing research into hurricanes and tornadoes for about 25 years now.
I've looked at, in fact, the Birmingham area tornado back in 1998. I came over there and I looked at the devastation there, just some of the most intense damage that I have seen. And, you know, looking at, say over 60-65 tornado disasters, it gives me a perspective that's fairly unique in terms of how buildings are put together and how they fall apart.
But Katrina, it sounds like, is one for the records in your field as well.
Absolutely. In fact, I think Katrina was the storm of my lifetime. I don't think there'll be anything quite like it again. I think, really, when it comes down to it, if you're going to live in the Gulf Coast area, in a low-lying area, you really need to do some homework, and you need to figure out how high or elevation you are and have a plan of action so that you know how to be somewhat prepared for these disasters and definitely get the right insurance and plenty of insurance.
You have some memories you'll never forget.
Well, certainly to see the extent of flooding was absolutely amazing to me. To have a system like a single weak point in a levee collapse, and then that just kind of leads to a catastrophic disaster. And we have to do better than that. We have to have some redundancy in these levee systems so that we don't get this catastrophic disaster the next time.
What are your hopes now, based on what you observed?
Well, I am hoping that people take a look at this. I mean, we can learn from a disaster. I mean, we have that option here. And I hope we can learn from this.
And I'd say the big question now is, will we learn from this? You know, I feel as if people like the Tim Marshalls of the world, the engineers, the scientists, had the majority rule in how the Gulf Coast is rebuilt, we'd probably have the most storm-protected, damage-immune environment imaginable, but into this whole mix, politics will rear its ugly head. Any thoughts, guys?
It always does. Always happens that way.
Yeah. I have to agree with Tim about something, and that is I was stunned, and I was in Gulf Shores for Ivan, which was a direct hit, and then in Gulf Shores for Katrina. And I really was stunned at the storm surge in Gulf Shores being as bad in Katrina as it was in Ivan. And yet, you know, Katrina's center was, what, 110 miles west of Gulf Shores? So what Tim was talking about it being the great extent of storm surge destruction, that really surprised me as well.
And we're not too far from the start of hurricane season again for 2006. Makes you wonder if we're going to have to deal with another one like that.
And you think of all these major cities that have really been, you know, they haven't taken a direct hit in a while, and I guess you have to think about Galveston and Houston. They had that scare with Rita last year, but, you know, as that thing kind of jogged a little bit to the east, it missed them. And really, you think of all the Florida cities, Tampa Bay and St. Petersburg, and even Miami. Andrew has been, what, 13 years ago or 14 years ago now? And up in the Northeast United States, even in New York City and in Boston, there's a lot of big targets for these tropical systems. And, you know, Tim, for those people that don't know, Tim Marshall he's the best in the business as far as I'm concerned. When you combine his background as an engineer and that of a meteorologist, for him to be able to come in and make these kind of observations is extremely useful. And I think every city planner, every mayor, everybody needs to listen carefully to what he said, because his words were very wise and very astute.
Brian, you have worked with Tim Marshall when he came and surveyed the West Jefferson County Oak Grove tornado in April 98. He's just a fascinating person to be around and to listen to hear him analyze how structures failed.
Oh, absolutely. You know, a little story there. When he called me and asked, of course, he has no credentials to get into a disaster scene. So Tim's usual, now it may be now he does, I'm not sure, but since Hague has really become a national name in looking at these disasters. But in the April 98 F5 tornado in Jefferson County, Tim called me and said, you know, I have no way to get in. Can I go with you, or can we go together or something? And, you know, I was scared to death, because here comes the best guy in the whole world or the whole universe who is going to be looking at my F5 rating, and it's like, oh, gosh, did I do it right? And I was kind of worried, but I don't think I slept real well the night before he showed up thinking about that. But when he was going through the destruction and pointing out some things, you know, I actually arranged, when I was in Fort Worth in the regional office of the National Weather Service, I arranged for Tim to give a training session to all of the warning coordination meteorologists across the southern region. And that was some of the best training I think I've ever gotten. Tim is a great knowledge source, and he can convey his knowledge very well, and I think it was some of the best knowledge I've ever been able to get on the job training kind of thing, to be able to go out and do storm surveys. But yeah,
is he on this new team that will come in when there's a school of thought that there might be an F4 F5 tornado?
Yeah, I believe he's one of the 20 people. Yes.
Okay.
He came here. I tell you, I was impressed with Tim. I've been impressed with Tim for a long time. As I say, I was in the, I'm trying to think what year that was. I think it was, I want to say it was like 85 or 86 that I had him do the training. So that's like 20 years ago. And at a regional WCM meeting. But when Tim came here he was on the national survey team for the Piedmont tornado in March 27th, 1994. And we sat down together for just a few minutes, and I was talking to him about the church. And it was really interesting, because he told me about how he believed the church came apart. And then, of course, I was able to view the videotape that was made, you know, was made during that service. And it came apart in the videotape exactly the way Tim had described it to me. And, of course, he never saw the tape. So it was, you know, it was amazing that it just came about exactly as he described how he believed it came apart.
He's fascinating to be around if you're at a damaged scene, because to an untrained eye, you just look and see a bunch of destruction and damage. Tim can sit there and break it down and explain what part of the structure gave way first, and then that allowed this wall or this part of the roof to cave in. And the way he explains it, it's almost like he was there, just, you know, reenacting it. And it makes perfect sense. It really takes a scene of just total confusion and makes it understandable as to what happened. So he is a really interesting person to be around.
There was a small tornado in Grant, Alabama, which is in northern Marshall County. And we were told, of course, I was with the Weather Service then, but we were told that one house was totally destroyed. And so it's like, wow, and swept off its foundation. Well, that's the definition of an F5. And it's like, wow, I mean, this just didn't seem to be that kind of event. So I drove up there, and lo and behold, you know, we got a few trees down and some limbs snapped off and some roof damage here and there. And this one house is swept off its foundation, thanks to what Tim has conveyed in all the training that I've had with him over a number of different times. I started looking very closely at the foundation. There was not one single anchor point of the walls around the cement foundation. If you'd have taken a car and just pushed it against the house, you could have swept it off its foundation.
Gracious.
Which explains why there are different scale, there's different kinds of damage very close to one another, because this was a house swept off its foundation, and just a few yards away is another house with roof damage.
What you'll learn from people like Tim is how crummy some of the construction techniques are around here.
Absolutely.
It's just, It's stunning, and that's not a knock on, you know, contractors, but some of these homes are basically just sitting on slabs with gravity holding them down. Mm-hmm. And, you know, first good gust of wind, it's going to come along. You're going to have some major damage. And that's where the engineers come in and bring some amazing information when it comes to assessing tornadoes and how they're rated on the Fujita scale and all that. So it's kind of neat to hear from their perspective.
Well, I think, David, you hit the nail on the head when you said, you know, as I recall, you went with us, didn't you?
Yeah, sure did.
You know, Tim looks for the small things, like, when I went to this Grant tornado, I looked for some sort of anchor as to why the walls would come apart and you know, fly downstream so easily. And that's what Tim does, is he looks for the small things, and that usually answers many of those questions about, well, why is this damage so bad, but right very close here is damage that isn't so bad.
I'll tell you what, we'll hang on to Tim Marshall's phone number, and maybe if there are any more disasters, which there probably will be, hope not, but if there are, we'll be able to check in with him. We want to open up the WeatherBrains email bag. Got an email from a listener up in Florence, Alabama, from Fred. Thought we would share his comments. He's got an interesting question, guys. Quote, why can't we dispense with showers and just call it rain? After all, that's what it is. The only reason we got into this bad habit is that showers is a soft word that sounds far less threatening or disrupting. Rain is now fairly limited to being referred to in terms of extremes. That is, when there's drought, no one says we need showers. Instead, they say we badly need rain. Or if there's a flood, they say there is a threat of more rain, not more showers. As an example of how even this logic has become further distorted, one weathercaster in Nashville recently referred to flooding showers, an oxymoron if there ever was one. I have no proof, but I strongly suspect such nonsense began with the Weather Channel, which continues to work overtime in putting new spins on what has always been a scientific natural phenomenon. I also attribute overnight hours to them. I guess overnight wasn't quite dramatic enough. The result is that now we are often told to expect showers during the overnight hours. Back to the point, I urge you to return to the days of yesteryear when accuracy in weather forecasting was more important than converting it to an exercise in touchy-feely language. I firmly believe it would be a step in the right direction. So, how would you describe rain? Just as we used to. Specifically, rain can be simply, effectively, and accurately described as steady, occasional, scattered, widespread, light, and heavy. Case closed. Signed, Fred. Thoughts, guys?
The Weather Channel definitely did not invent the word showers. That's been going on for centuries, I guess, at least for decades. But showers implies the precipitation is more variable in intensity, varying from light to moderate to heavy, than rain, which is more usually of a steady nature.
Yeah, I think there's a very clear-cut difference to me. And I will say this, a lot of times, David, I don't think I do a good job of communicating this stuff, but you know, you look at a radar on a June afternoon, and you know, it might be raining on one side of town and not raining on the other side. That's showers. And to me, that also implies convective, where when you just say rain, that infers a large mass of rain that covers a large part of the territory, and it's stratiform. So I agree with JB. To me, there's a huge difference in the terms. You can't use them to describe the same kind of weather. So maybe it's our fault for not communicating that. What do you say, Brian?
Well, I agree with you. I think what we're trying to convey with the word showers is the characteristic of the rain. And as JB pointed out, you know, it's scattered, and you know, there's different intensities, and you know, you and I can be under the same shower. I'm here in Helena, and I get 4 inches of rain. You're up there in River Chase, we're under the same shower, and you get a quarter of an inch. And I think that's what showers is trying to convey. And I know I've tried to use. And I did this in the Weather Service. I try to use the term rain when I expect a stratiform rain that's going to be like an all-day kind of event and everybody's going to get wet, as opposed to showers where there may even be a line and everybody's still going to get wet, but the character is it's not going to rain for a long period of time. So I think we are trying to convey something, and maybe we haven't done a good job of letting people know what we mean by the term showers.
Now, I've always thought about we probably need to write a glossary, and I know that there's a million glossaries on the web for, you know, weather terms, but maybe one that's specific to our territory here in Alabama where we serve, because I think that'd be pretty helpful. And a lot of people move here, and they're not used to tornadoes and, you know, severe thunderstorms and large hail. And this stuff can be kind of creepy. You know, people move here from, you know, California or someplace up north. So I'll see if I can build one of those here. I'll put JB on that. JB is our... He's a walking weather encyclopedia.
Well, if you guys decide to do the encyclopedia, I'll be interested to see the difference in definitions for partly sunny and partly cloudy.
That's those weather service terms. JB knows the answer to that.
Uh-oh, no, I don't. That's one of my unfavored terms.
I opened a can of worms.
Yeah. You did.
Actually, so what's the difference, JB?
That one bugs me. I asked one of the guys in the weather service one time, and he seemed to think that partly cloudy indicated a little more sunshine than partly sunny, and I didn't see it that way. I thought it was just the opposite, but I just don't like the two terms. Used to, we could say the forecast for tonight through Wednesday night, partly cloudy and mild. And now you have to break it up because it can't be partly sunny at night. It can be partly moony.
Careful who you moon there, baby.
This thing always goes downhill at the end, doesn't it?
It just goes downhill in a hurry. We formally apologize. This podcast was officially weather-related until things started going downhill toward the very end. Anything else to cover, guys? Everybody's happy?
I'm happy, and I'm still just kind of in the zone. You know, it's funny, working one severe weather day is fairly intense, but when you got four like that, I've been kind of in the zone for a few days. So
I think you
Saturday I went down and picked some strawberries and ate some barbecue, and I'm still full from that.
Ooh, I think you deserved it, sir. You guys have had some rough times in the weather office.
Jim's Pit Barbecue?
Jim's Ooh. Pit Barbecue, Billingsley, Alabama. Ooh. After picking strawberries at Sunshine Farms. These are places basically in the middle of nowhere, but it's good. And strawberry crop is amazing this year, by the way.
Living in the South is good, huh?
And Jason Simpson and I went to Hollis Crossroads and became unofficial firemen.
Yeah, we posted some pictures of Brian and Jason on the blog. Go to abc3340.com and weather and then blog, and they look real cute in those little fire hats.
The thought of Brian Peters putting out anybody's fire is disturbing to me for some reason.
And those hats were heavy, by the way.
I bet you it was hot, too.
Yeah, those guys have a tough job. They really do.
They really do.
Hollis Crossroads Fire Department is the only fire department I'm aware of, and I'm sure there are others, but it's the only one I know of that has orange fire trucks.
Hmm. Well, you guys had a good time. That's what matters.
Yes.
The ones in Tuscaloosa are yellow, aren't they?
Yellow. This may be a whole new podcast subject, the color of fire trucks. Which are more visible in certain types of weather? I don't know. A reminder that the opinions expressed on Weather Brains are strictly those of the speaker and are not necessarily those of ABC 3340. If you'd like to contact us, and that's a chance you're going to have to take, our email address is question@weatherbrains.com. For James Spann, J.B. Elliott, and Brian Peters, I'm David Black. We thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time for some more Weather Brains. Weather Brains is copyright 2006. All rights reserved. Adios.
Sorry I polluted it right at the end.
He didn't pollute it.